It's now my honor and pleasure to introduce a good friend, a dedicated community servant, and a true legend for as our moderator for today's lunch panel, Olympic and Paralympic Inspirations and Insights, Tom Kelly. Tom has been a Park City resident for 38 years, landing in the Wasatch back in 1988. A noted Paralympic and Olympic storyteller, Tom has served as the spokesperson for U.S. Ski and Snowboard for 32 years, has worked 12 Olympic Games, serving on the front line with athletes for over 75 Olympic medals. He's the 2018 recipient of the U.S. Paralympic and Paralympic Committee Building Dream Awards, and was inducted into the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Hall of Fame in 2019. Tom remains deeply engaged in the Olympic movement and is now serving as the chief spokesperson for Utah 2034. Please join me in welcoming the always incredible Tom Kelly to the stage.
Scott, thank you very much. Scott, you do get best dressed of the day. I love the combo there. How's everybody doing on this beautiful spring day here, huh? Isn't it great to come to a place like this and to be able to look outside and see the Uintas in the background and the Jordanelle and think about, wow, we live in a really, really special place, don't we? So I want to throw a scary number out to you. In 2,833 days, the world will be here. So you have a little bit of time, okay? More than we did in 2002, but it's coming up in 2,833 days. Now, we're going to talk about a number of things today, about our communities, how we will welcome the games, what it will mean to us. But I want you to think for just a minute about what this means to the world. Over 3 billion people will be watching us. No pressure out there. But around the world, 3 billion people will be watching what goes on here in the Wasatch Back. You know, as I started out talking about, we live in this amazing place. You know, we have in the Heber Valley, in the wintertime, beautiful snow-covered fields, Soldier Hollow, and the white-capped peaks of Mount Timpanogos. In Park City, we have thriving ski industry. We have an historic Main Street that will be a centerpiece for the games. But I want you to think for just a minute, how do we want the world to see us in 2034? How do we want the world to remember us? What memories do we want to take away? What dreams do we want to leave to our children to think about their future in this wonderful place? And there's going to be simple things like, how do we go to get the groceries at Smith's? But all those things, we have 2,833 days to cover them. Today, we've assembled a panel of your friends and neighbors, people who are all dedicated to the lifestyle that we all enjoy here on the Wasatch Back. 3 months ago, each of our panelists spent time over in Milano Cortina for the Olympic and Paralympic Winter Games. They were there to observe, to be educated, to meet with their peers, and really understand from a behind-the-scenes perspective things that they needed to bring back here to the Wasatch Back and think about for our communities here. Please join me in welcoming our panelists. I'll introduce each of them. First of all, a longtime friend of mine. He serves as the Chief Operating Officer for the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation. He got his Olympic start in Sydney in his native Australia back in 2000, working for the Games there. And since there, he's been involved with 9 summer and winter games. Today, he oversees daily operations at the legacy venues of Soldier Hollow, Utah Olympic Park, and the Utah Olympic Oval. Please welcome Callum Clark from Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation. At the end. Next, someone who moved to our community in 2011, and since then he's become a real pillar of public service. He was, I think within a short time of his landing here, he was engaging in what he looked at as his civic responsibilities. He got involved in local nonprofits, became president of the Park City Rotary Club, served as chair of the Snyderville Planning Commission, was elected to the city council in 2021, and then mayor in 2024. Please join me in welcoming Park City Mayor Ryan Dickey. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
What's up, Kyle?
Next, a great story for us here on the Wasatch Back. As a young girl growing up in Park City, she had an opportunity to try winter sport through the Youth Sports Alliance's Get Out and Play program. She tried a bunch of sports and she ended up gravitating to luge. And thanks to the efforts of the Wasatch Luge Club and the amazing facility we have at the Utah Olympic Park, a Wasatch Back native had an opportunity to pursue her dream. That dream became an Olympic medal just a few months ago when Ashley Farquharson won bronze in the luge in Milano Cortina. Please join me in welcoming Olympic medalist Ashley Farquharson. We'll see the medal in just a bit.
See you, Ashley.
Our next panelist is a colleague of mine at Utah 2034. She grew up in the Heber Valley, and she built a great career in government relations working for Mitt Romney, Jason Chaffetz, and the Larry H. Miller companies. She is highly respected for her knowledge of government affairs, and it's my pleasure to welcome the Director of Government Relations for Utah 2034, Kelsey Berg.
Hey.
And finally, someone who is a Utah native and found his way from the Wasatch Front to the Wasatch Back a little bit over a decade ago. He's been involved in the hospitality industry now for over a decade. He joined Heber Valley in 2014 and became the executive director of Visit Heber Valley in 2020. Please join me in welcoming from Heber Valley, Dallin Kosher. Panelists, thank you so much for joining us here today. I know that all of you spent time over Milano Cortina. You took in some events, you met colleagues, you got behind the scenes, you worked long hours over there to learn and bring things back. So we want to hear, though, before we get into the nitty-gritty and the kind of the meat of the business here today, just what's one fun memory that you've taken away from those games that stayed with you over 3 months? Callum, why don't you kick it off?
Get to go first? Oh, great. When you say one, you meant two, right? Two memories.
Yeah.
Two that really stick out. One is definitely personal. Here from my accent, I'm Australian, and I grew up in the snowy mountains of Australia, and we had the opportunity to see the women's snowboard cross finals. And an Australian girl, Josie Baff, I can feel it in the back of my neck, she won gold medal. I used to ski instruct with her dad in Perish Valley, and seeing his face that night on the main street of Lavinia, and the shock of what the heck are you doing in this place, Callum? And I said, well, I saw that you're in town, so I thought I'd come and catch up with you. But seeing a local kid, like just like you, Ashley, who I knew from just as a baby grow up and to become one of the gold medalists was a really special moment. Number two, equally as cool. As a part of the Observer program, it's hectic. Right, you're moving around a lot, you're on buses early, you're at these observer sessions. And I had this moment, and I looked at some of the faces. We found this little random back street where they were serving pizza in the hole in the wall. And we were sitting on benches, and we were debriefing on what we learned for the day, and we were building up energy because we were about to go out to the bobsled track that night, and it was a cold night ahead of us. And I looked around, and I thought, my goodness, the quality of people that we have in this community and their level of engagement and their passion for the Olympics was just awesome. But that was awesome. The pizza was even better. The pizza was unbelievable. They're my two memories.
I didn't have a good pizza while I was there, so I need to get some tips from you. Ryan, what has stuck with you the last few months?
Well, I have my own pizza memories, but I won't beat that horse again.
You know, I think, first of all, number one, if I just think about what I'm going to remember from that time in Italy and in Cortina, it is really just a visceral sort of vibe of being at the Olympics. I've never been to an Olympics. I wasn't here in 2002. The spirit of the games, that is just everywhere. It's an electric atmosphere. Athletes and their families are everywhere. There's just a spirit on the street that is like no other event I've attended. And so I love that. And I think the second thing was the opportunity to meet the mayor of Cortina. You know, this Olympic Observer program, it sort of unfolded over this week, where we began with the IOC and region leaders and local leaders. And there was a bit of dysfunction there at the start of the games, and the IOC was frustrated, and the region's frustrated, and the mayor's we'd heard about was frustrated. And he had actually run on a slogan 2 years before of Cortina first, Olympics last. And so we're really eager to meet this this gentleman. And so it was the last session that we went to. We got to meet the mayor of Cortina. He turned out to be this phenomenal guy. I'm sort of this Roberto Benigni character, and he loved the Olympics. Cortina was having a phenomenal time during the games, but it was a little bit of a cautionary tale of Cortina was a little bit late to get bring that enthusiasm and that spirit of the games, something that I don't issue, we won't have here in Utah, so that if you're going to have the games, you want to go all in. And that was just a big takeaway from these games, is if we're going to do it, we go all in. And I think that's been our mentality since then.
So Olympics is higher up on your list.
Yes, yes, for sure.
Beautiful. Ashley, we'll come back to you, but Kelsey, what stuck with you the last few months?
Thank you for not making me follow the bronze medalist as the memorable event. Mine was, I was blessed to be able to attend the opening ceremony, which was quite spectacular, and the largest venue I've ever been in, and just all of the pomp and circumstance, and seeing all of those people together was just pretty remarkable to see. Again, I mean, I don't know how many countries are represented there, but it was the best of what Italy had to offer. Brought back some memories of watching 2002. I was in sixth grade in 2002, and so not a whole lot of memories, but watching our opening ceremonies and just that whole kind of expanse and all of humanity there was pretty remarkable, and just watching it there in person really kind of hit me. And I'm excited for us in 34.
Great. Thanks, Kelsey. Dallin, how about you?
Yeah, let me, my experience starts actually at Soldier Hollow years before. And we, in our office, we sometimes we host foreign travel agents and dignitaries into the area. And we had this group from Germany, and we're taken up to Soldier Hollow, and I was trying to make some small talk, make some connection, and say, like, hey, yeah, this is just after Jesse Diggins had won a gold medal in cross country. And I was like, trying to like make some connection. I said to her, yeah, we got our first gold medal in cross country. And this German gets really serious and says, first and last. I'm like, oh, okay. I didn't know it was so touchy. And so I go to Anholtz to see the biathlon. And I'm like, oh, I get it now. This is what, it was just like this amazing party atmosphere. They had this tent that they built, had 3,000 people in there, and they were hooping and wailing, hollering around, having a great time, and all of a sudden, the band is from probably from like Norway or something, says, who wants to go to West Virginia? And they start singing John Denver's West Virginia, and the whole crowd is singing Rocky Mountain High, going to West Virginia, and I'm like, what is going on in here? And so, it was so cool to see this kind of vibe that happens at the Olympics.
What an awesome memory. Ashley, I want to go to you. And before we do your question, we want to see your medals. Why don't you stand up so folks can get a look out in the front of the stage.
Princess.
You know you've got it in your pocket. But before we look at the medal, you actually have something more important to show us, right?
Oh.
Ashley just got engaged. I just want to make sure that like took a priority over the medal. So let's see the medal. Olympic bronze medal. There it is, folks.
Yeah. Photo op.
Okay, we'll get. Yeah, all right. Fan club is here. Ashley, I think I can pretty much guess what memory you have that stuck with you for 3 months. But looking back on the games, what's that moment that's really stayed with you now over the last few months?
Wow, there are so many. I have to say, coming up the outrun on my last run and like being so close to the other women in the field and really not knowing if I was actually going to make it. And coming up and seeing the one on the scoreboard and just knowing that it was over and I'd done it. And then in the outrun, it's long because we're going so fast. So they shoot us back uphill to slow us down before we get out of the track. And so there was like 3 or 4 seconds where I was just totally by myself. And then coming into the finish dock, just the crowd and my family and all my teammates.
Yeah, it's a big moment. And Ashley, just so folks know, if you run us through the logistics, you did come down with the lead time at the time, but you knew at that point, right, that you had a medal.
Yeah, so the last run, we go last to first. So I knew if I came down in first, I would have had guaranteed myself a medal.
So let's take a look at the sport of luge. Tell us a little bit about it, and what is it that prompted you to put your body on a little sled and go 75 miles down an icy track?
When I was in fourth grade, my older brother was in sixth grade, and the Youth Sports Alliance does an after-school program, and luge is one of the sports, and I saw my brother do it, and I was like, Mom, you've got to get me in there. And she made me wait 2 years until I was also in sixth grade, but then I did the same after-school program, and they would just take us up to the track every Friday after school, and my coach, John Owen, would give us some elbow pads and a helmet and be like, see you at the bottom. And I fell in love with it, and I never stopped.
What did Mom and Dad think of it?
I don't know, guys. What do you think?
We'll ask them later.
I think that when I first started, and there's a major learning curve, and when you start, you're not going as fast. You start from lower down, but you still have no idea what's going on, and there's so much that could go wrong, and I would crash all the time, and I would have all these bruises, and I just looked like a wreck sometimes. I think that they were a lot more nervous then than they are now.
Well, I think they're pretty happy now. A couple more things on your medal win. That track was relatively new. It had only come online, I think, less than a year earlier. Had you had much experience with it, and how did you like the track? I know you won a medal, but how did it suit your style?
Let's see. When they build a new track, they have to go through this whole homologation process where they make sure it's safe and that you can get down. And they were also really, really behind schedule. And they have to give us 40 runs before we come back to race at the Olympics. So we had to kind of do it all at once. And it was annoying because then you don't have as much time to like process and sleep on it, go back and like remember how it feels to slide and then come again. So it does create this unique environment where the whole world kind of has to work together. And people that are my biggest competitors, we were comparing lines and talking about how to do it the best. The other kind of unique thing about Cortina was that it wasn't very hard. There wasn't a ton to do, and usually there's one way to get down the track, and if you take another route, you're not gonna make it down. And this track, it wasn't about that, because there were like 4 crashes total. It was so easy, and there wasn't a ton to think about, so it was more about finding what was actually gonna be the fastest instead of what was gonna get you to the bottom.
Well, it obviously worked, right?
Yeah.
Kelsey, it's 8 years, a little bit less than 8 years. In fact, 2,833 days until the games come back to Utah. Give folks a little sense of perspective as to what we're anticipating that the games will bring.
In relation to?
Numbers, metrics.
Yeah, so in the games in 2034 are 40% larger than they were in 2002. That's in everything from disciplines to athletes to teams to tickets. And so, yeah, you can see there on the screen, we'll have 16 plus sport disciplines, over 3,500 athletes between the Olympics and Paralympics, 92 national teams is how many participated in Italy. And then, yeah, roughly 3.3 million events are tickets between the two. And so, for example, since we're kind of here in 2002, Park City and Deer Valley alternated days in when they had events. And in 34, they will have events every day at the same time, along with Utah Olympic Park. And then obviously in Soldier Hollow and those on the Wasatch Front. And so there you can see our winter, our venue map for the Olympics. We're quite proud of the fact that it's a compact games. Everything's within an hour. The farthest north is Snow Basin. South is Provo at Peaks Arena. And then you go east and west. But along with that brings some challenges as trying to get, obviously, everyone around at the same time. And so we're going to have a lot. Moving a lot of people is probably going to be our biggest challenge when it comes to 34 that we're working on with our host communities at the moment.
Callum, I'm going to go to you on this in just a minute, but first, Kelsey, this is unusual. We just were in Milano Cortina, phenomenal venues, but they were really dispersed, but they did provide great sporting events for the athletes. This is really a different model. This is pretty unique, isn't it?
It is, and we'll see in the French Alps in 2030 that they will be quite spread out as well. LA, honestly, will be spread out for summer games, but they're quite a bit larger than winter games, but again, we're super excited for this, and that's kind of an interesting thing is if you talk to all of us up here that attended, we all had very different experiences with the Olympics because of how spread out it was. I saw one day of skiing and a lot of ice sports because I was in Milano, whereas all these folks up here that went to the mountains got to see a lot more of the skiing and not as much of hockey and some of those other things. So we're excited that you can do all your alpine events, your ice events, and everywhere in between, all in one day if that's what suits your fancy. But it'll be a lot of moving a lot of people along the same roads. So it'll be a challenge, but we'll get there.
Callum, one of the roles at Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation that you're involved with is just looking at over all of our venues. You have the experience of 9 games. What are the real benefits for sport and for the athletes when you have all of the venues so close?
I think that the Milan Cortina games were excellent and exceptional fields of play. When you speak with the international officials and the athletes, they have very fond memories of 2002, and it was that collegiate feel, the rubbing of shoulders and the true feeling of Olympism of being able to be alongside the luge athlete next to a biathlete athlete and that cross-pollination of these sports. These sports are very active in Central Europe, but they have their own tours. So I'm sure, Ashley, when you go to a town for a World Cup, you're not thinking about or coming across any alpine skiers or any hockey players. And that's what makes, I believe, Utah so special. And I think the other part of this is, due to the success of 2002 and those fond memories, we know we have great fields of play, but we've got so many more sports. So we've got this really interesting balance of looking back at great tradition and legacy of venues, but looking forward to seeing how we deliver slopestyle at Park City, how if ski mountaineering comes back, what that would look like with these new sports that are coming online. It's an exciting time for sure.
Dallin, you reside and work in what is truly a remarkable valley, beautiful open fields, picturesque backdrop of mountains. In 2002, Soldier Hollow was really a centerpiece with this great Western heritage feel that it generated. As you look ahead of the games in 2034, how do you capture that and how do you really capture what Heber Valley is all about at the games?
Soldier Hollow was very well attended there. I think they had over 150,000 people over the course of the games here, and I look to expect that same amount and in 2034, so it's a great venue. So what we're trying to do in Heber Valley is really capture and lean into our culture and heritage. So like we love this idea of these open spaces and these the beautiful nature that we have here. So we, over the next decade, we're going to be continuing to preserve those open spaces, like the North Fields we talk about in our community. Like those are important parts of that make Heber Valley unique and special. So we want to lean into some of that heritage of that we have. This, we talk about it in terms of these values and cultures, and so like we talked about the Western heritage of treating your neighbor with kindness, treating the environment with respect, and open spaces, and all these things encapsulate what the Heber Valley has to offer. So what that is something we look forward to continuing to emphasize in 2034 with additional activities and things in our downtown, making it that kind of special, that does it differentiate from what other things that people have experienced.
Great. We'll explore that a little bit more as we go on with the panel here. Mayor Dickey, Park City has a great legacy. In 2002, historic Main Street was just really a gathering spot for everyone. The games are going to bring a lot of people to town. They're going to bring a lot of excitement. How do you, as a community, balance the needs to showcase your community during the games with also letting the citizens manage their own day-to-day activities?
You know, during the games itself, I wasn't here in 2002, but it sounded like from those who were that that was the easiest 2 weeks to get around in the history of Park City, because we just were able to keep the cars out. And as we pursue all this important transportation infrastructure that we're going to hopefully build, not for 2034, of course, but for the generation beyond, you know, that'll help with that. So, you know, we're always, in general, as Park City, you know, you'd asked about it, managing the impact of tourism versus resident quality of life, and it really ebbs and flows with the economy. I mean, I think Park City Mountain Resort opened in November 1963, I think. I think about 10 days later, the first complaint about traffic and parking came in, and we were off to the races ever since. So I think having a community that's so excited about the games and that lived the games in 2002, so recently, all things considered in recent memory, we're fortunate to be in this community where we're just not really, I can say as a city, we're not getting a lot of pushback around the Olympics. We're just getting a lot of excitement, and that, you know, other communities don't necessarily have that luxury. So I think we're really able to design a games for these 2 weeks that works as the games and allows residents to go about their lives. But they're going to want to be involved in these games too.
Yeah. By the way, keep this slide up there for a minute. How many of you were on Main Street when the Budweiser Clydesdales came down? That was quite a day. Ryan, that's something for you to look forward to this time.
We're going to arrange that. Don't worry, Tom.
Let's see. Oh, so I want to go to you, Dallin, and then over to Mayor Dickey. When the organizing committee did listening tours with all of the host venue communities, one of the questions that was asked is, take a look at your community today, and what do you have in your community now that wouldn't be there today if it hadn't been for the 2002 games? Dallin?
Yeah, you know, I think there's the easy answer of, like, there's infrastructure of some water resources and other resources that we have in Heber Valley that weren't there, which were great and added a lot of benefit for local residents. But one of the things that I think that was really unique and special that the Olympic legacy left for us is Soldier Hollow and this idea of hospitality and welcoming the world to Heber Valley. I think that's one of the true things that has happened for our community. We have that event, that venue brings in lots of guests every year for activities and events from sheepdogs to downhill tubing and all sorts of things in between. So that really created this legacy of wanting to bring the world to our community, inviting these events to our valley, and having this economic driver that lasted well beyond just these infrastructure projects, but things that have made a lasting impact for our community. So Soldier Hollow has been one of the neat venues that has, beyond just the Olympics that we've had, that have brought a lot of activity to our community.
Great, thanks, Dallin. Ryan, how about you? What's in Park City today that might not have been there if it hadn't been for the Olympics in 2002?
Well, you know, the Old Town Transit Center, first and foremost, is we were able to put a really important piece of transportation infrastructure that continues to serve us today in that transit center. And you can look more broadly in Summit County of things the games delivered. I think bigger picture, what the games delivered for Park City is it just really put us on the map as an international destination known throughout the world. Now, we deliver such an incredible experience here that we would have been certainly just discovered anyway. But being an Olympic city, I think it just creates this point of pride for our residents and this visibility around the world that I don't think would quite be at the level where it is without 2002.
Let me add to that a little bit. This morning, Natalie Gochner, who gave the opening address from the Kem Gardner Institute, she talked about what the games brought here to the Wasatch Back, a certain type of resiliency as a part of the legacy. Do you see that? I know you weren't here in 2002, but do you see that or sense that in what you see in the community here today?
From a resiliency perspective?
Just a resilience factor and maybe a culture and a lifestyle that has allowed the Wasatch back to really weather storms maybe a little bit better than other places.
Yeah, I think that's true. And even going back to 08 and the post-08 period, we saw in Park City that the dip in housing was much shorter and much smaller than it happened in other communities. I think it does create a more resilient economy. And of course, the efforts of so many people, I'm sure, in this room to create a year-round resort economy, which makes us more resilient and better able to weather spikes and weather, for sure.
Yeah. Dallin, anything to add from Heber Valley in terms of the resiliency of the Wasatch Back?
I think just that the concept and that notion of being welcoming. One of the great things I love about our community is this idea that you hear that when people come visit our community, like, oh, they're so welcoming. The people are so nice and kind and friendly. And I think that is a benefit that our visitors will see again. And it just makes our community much more special. And I hope that in 2034, we still lean to those values and that way of life that we truly, truly adore.
Great. Kelsey, you've had the opportunity to visit many of the host venue communities. Are there some central themes that you're hearing about the enthusiasm of people or what they're looking forward to?
Yeah, well, and I'll just take even a step above that and just, I think, Utahns in general. I think 2002 was an awesome opportunity for us to make so many Utahns go out and bless the world and, you know, learn other languages or whatever. And so, as Dallin kind of said, it was an opportunity to welcome everyone here and show off. For example, we're well known for our language skills, and I think I've seen anywhere from 130 to 140 different languages are spoken in Utah. And that, along with the volunteerism, and knowing that I think in 2002 that we could host big events and come together, and that pride that still continues. I mean, I could ask how many here, you know, still have their jackets if they volunteered in 2002, because I guess, yeah, raise your hand if you still have a jacket from 2002. There's a handful. And you'll see them on the ski slopes, and we saw a handful of them in Italy, and I'm sure that will continue. And so that sense of pride, and now we're excited to do that, I think, for a second generation in 34, and to still have that pride and let people know that they volunteered. When I, in a former life of traveling the state with campaigns with former Senator Romney, it was remarkable how it didn't matter where we were in the state, people would bring their O2 paraphernalia to show him, whether it was a volunteer jacket or a beret or a quilt that they made themselves or their, you know, stuff they hung on the wall and their framed pieces. And so I think that pride is there and has carried on and has led to Utah being able to host a number of big events that we might not have felt confident handling if we hadn't had 2002.
As you go around, are you getting people come up to you to say, hey, I want to volunteer,
yes.
Where can I sign up?
Yes, multiple times, and that'll be a great time for that and a great place, and we're excited for the excitement, and again, to have people volunteer a second time or have multiple generations of families to volunteer, and so that is definitely an excitement and something that we want all 29 counties and all corners of the state to be able to experience.
Callum, one of the things that most excites me with my background in sport is kind of thinking back to when we were building these venues back in the 90s, and we had all these great venues being built, but we really didn't have the culture, we didn't have the programs and things like that. Now today, 25 years later, we have that culture, we have the programs. How important is that combination of having these great legacy venues with some amazing club programs for athletes so that we get full community and sport benefits?
This is where Utah really did an incredible job in coming into the games well before 2002. They were thinking clearly and strategically about what legacy was going to be left behind from the games. And the brilliance of it wasn't about place, it wasn't about things. These venues that I work alongside with at Utah Olympic Park and Soldier Hollow and the Oval, they're places they can become these historical monuments for a time past and maybe an elite training center, but that's not what the vision was. The vision was, how do we make this ours? Our asset, our community, part of our community and in our community fabric. The programs that happen in our at our venues, it's incredible, just since 2019, the level of growth that we've been seeing. Since 2019, the programs that our foundation conducts has grown nearly 60%. And if you think about the Olympic Oval, it's a finite place. It's not that many more hours that we can run things, but it shows the growth of that of the interest in these winter sports. Second to that, the Kem Gardner Institute, who you referred to before, they did an economic impact study of our facilities, and they reported that there was 148,000 training days happening in 1 year at our venues. So that's a kid or an adult coming to our venue for a session, maybe an hour and a half or 2 hours. And you think of the breadth of what that was, and looking down the list, it ranged from high school mountain biking for the Wasatch Back and the Wasatch School District, right up to the elite training of the US speed skating team, Ashley's national team training runs at the sliding track. And that breadth and depth, it makes our venues a part of us. As I look out into the room, I'd hope to think that your kids, your relatives, I see some fantastic lifelong volunteers that work on our events, is a part of our community activity and just something that we do. And I think, as you said so well, Mayor Dickey, we're an Olympic city, but this is part of a much wider continuum about who we are and how we operate.
Ashley, I want to go to you and a couple of questions, but just piggybacking first off of what Callum had to say, how important was the Wasatch Luge Club to you?
So the funny thing about when I started Luge was that I was 11, and I would just go up to the UOP every day after school the same way that someone else would go to soccer practice. So I didn't really know that it was weird until a couple years after that when I had to be like, you don't know what Luge is? And I think that's a really unique part of living in and around here. The Wasatch Luge Club and the Youth Sports Alliance have really given me every opportunity through my career to succeed.
I want you to, I know you've got an Olympic bronze medal, you're an Olympic medalist, but I want you to set that aside for just a minute. What have you learned as a person? What life skills has sport taught you as a participant in Luge over the years?
I don't know where I would be without sport today. I think it teaches you so much, whether it's individual or team, you are a part of something bigger. You learn how to work hard. You learn how to work hard even when you don't want to. You learn how to do scary things. You learn how to do hard things. You learn how to do things over and over and over again and get sick of them and then keep going. You learn how to adapt. You learn how to be a better, well-rounded individual that can take you into the professional field, the education world. It can kind of take you anywhere.
And then one more thing. You've had the opportunity to travel all over the world. You've been able to see different Luge programs. How important is that community support? Do you feel that? Like when you're over in Milano or you're at one of the other tracks in the world, do you feel that support of your community back here on the Wasatch Back?
Yeah, I believe that I do. And I think that the importance that we put behind our Olympic venues and our programs for kids, it's really prevalent when I go places that do not care about that. Like in this most recent Olympics, I was in Cortina where the sliding track was. And when we went to Milan for a couple of sports just to spectate, it was like you didn't even know the Olympics was there because it's such a big city and so many people were so indifferent to them being in Milan. And then we went back to Cortina where everyone was so genuinely happy and excited to have the athletes back in town. And it makes such a difference in the morale and how you feel as an athlete going into something. And I know the Olympics can be a little bit polarizing, but having a community that fully backs it is really special.
So all of you were over in Milano Cortina. I want to go to those who are involved in our observer delegation over there. Dallin, I'll start with you. But you had an opportunity to get behind the scenes to see how communities and venues activated around the games. If each of you could share maybe a story or an example that you saw that maybe you can bring back home. Dallin, why don't you kick it off?
Yeah, one of the things I would really want to bring back home after being in Cortina was this idea of getting people into the downtowns and getting the people into our community to experience what we have to offer. Cortina was beautiful. the Dolomites were amazing. It just you couldn't stand around there and not help but be in awe. But I think that there were some opportunities that I think we can have here in Wasatch County and in Summit County to bring these folks into our community to see what it's like to live like Heber Valley, to live like Summit County and Park City, to see what it's like. That's something I think I missed a bit in Cortina, that I didn't get to experience as much as I was hoping to, either because some of the activations weren't same time or just weren't there. But I do think that is a great opportunity that we have here in Utah, is to, especially in Heber Valley, is to bring the folks that are going up, they're going to go to Soldier Hollow, but how are we going to get them into town? One of the things I learned and that I thought was interesting is that they were saying in the Observer program that there is a similar number of people who come to the games without tickets as people who come to the games with tickets. I'm like, wow, that's a lot of people that could be coming through our community. So what can we do to encourage them to stay in our community and enjoy it? This time around, Heber Valley is going to be much more excited and engaged in welcoming the guests here. I think in 2002, it was more of a kind of, the Olympics happened to us, and so now we want to be part of this experience now.
Great. Callum, how about you? What did you see over in Milano Cortina?
And the one of the great takeaways in the special places, then those beautiful mountain communities in particular, Bormio, Livigno, and in Cortina, the desire for whether it be the athlete or the official and the spectator to embrace the full experience of an Olympic Games. And I think I've said this before, is that the guest of an Olympics knows no boundaries. They don't know where the Wasatch County ends, or where the city boundary ends, or where the venue management perimeter ends. What they want is they want a seamless experience, and they want to embrace and soak up that Olympic spirit. And in so many places, I experienced that as you peeled out of the competition venue into the village, and the flags were on the sides of buildings, and you felt that sense of Olympism. That is one of the great takeaways. And as Dallin said, people are going to want to go into the city of Heber. They're going to want to go to downtown Park City, and they're going to want to feel that Olympic spirit. They just came from a great Olympic experience, and how do they extend that? And that's, I think, some of the secret opportunity of this amazing community or communities, is that we've got communities that are similar but are unique in their own way, and people are going to want to soak those experiences up.
Cool. Mayor Dickey, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many opportunities for us. We're so lucky in so many ways. You know, Cortina was great, but if you think of the advantages that we have with the small footprint of the games, the way that in the United States, we crush operations. You know, we got to Cortina, and there were three really important pieces of infrastructure that weren't finished. And kudos to Cortina. One of our takeaways, as our Jody Emery on our team will put it, you got to have a plan B. And they did plan B great. But here we know we can crush the games. We know we can crush the operation. And it gives us the opportunity as we organize the games to think about, what can we do different? What can we innovate? What can we try that's new? Because we know we can pull off the games itself. So we have permission as planners to think about, how do we make this next Olympics well beyond what we've already done and well beyond any Olympics ever?
Kelsey, how about you? Activations you saw that were memorable?
Yeah, one of the funniest ones actually was, and now you coin it, it's called pin diplomacy. And there was actually not a ton of pin trading, but that was actually one of the funnest experiences I had, was trading pins. And there was this older gentleman, I have no clue what language he spoke or where he was from. He did not speak English, I did not speak his language, but we knew enough to be able to trade pins and have that experience, and to see kind of all those people pulled in, which I think goes to, again, even if you don't go to the games, to an event, there are things you can do to experience the games. And that's one that was fun to participate in, and one I'm really excited for us to just crush in 34. And just interesting components like that, and things that lead you through cities and bring it along, so that, again, if you're going to an event or not, there's still things to do to feel like you're part of the games.
What was the coolest pin you found over there?
Oh man, I have found a really old Coca-Cola pin with the polar bear drinking Coca-Cola, and then there were a couple old M&M ones that were the old school enamel, and anyway, they're pretty cool.
People are going to go home tonight, and they're going to start to dig out those old green Jell-O and other pins from 2002.
Exactly.
Callum, you had an opportunity to take the leaders of all of our host venue resorts over to Livigno and some of the other cities to watch ski and snowboard events from behind the scenes. How valuable was that to be able to take the leadership of our resorts over to see how they actually build the games out from behind the scenes?
It was a real honor as I look at some of these photos of the amazing experiences that was in Bormio. First of all, it was a testament of the leadership of our resort partners. This was an incredibly tough season, as you all know. They were coming into President's Weekend, and we asked for them to spend 5 days on the ground in Italy and 7 days away from a really critical part of their season. And they came with full intention and a desire to learn. It was a 5 days on the ground, and we put them through the paces in Milano. We went up to Bormio and then over to Livigno. I think the takeaways that I saw this team looking at was, one, the field of play. What was the level of service? What did it look like? And what's that execution? And these folks know how to execute great experiences in the ski recreation industry. And it was amazing watching their very keen eye look at it. The second part is there's a lot of questioning about how the Olympic footprint was impacting or what the ripple effects was with their day skiing population. And we know that the Olympics is going to have an impact on the skiing public, but there was a lot of questions and there were a real desire of saying, how do we create these two incredibly important things happen in partnership with each other and to support each other rather than create a conflict or a friction. And the third one, which is a really valuable takeaway, was that intersection between competition venue, resort, and community, how that flowed, what was going on between local businesses and the resort, the local ski school, ski schools are different over there. They're almost like independent businesses. And they had a very keen eye in looking at what that flow was, what the relationship was, and how those interactions were working to make all of these pieces work. And one of the big ones was a great takeaway was Livigno. Livigno is a very large ski area. They've got a historic main street, and you could see that they had a pretty thriving day skier activities, as well as a massive footprint with an Olympic Games. And you could see that it was working. And I think that inspired all of us about how we do this as best as we can.
Ashley, I want to go to you next. And you made your Olympic debut in Beijing in 2022, but it was a sterile environment, no family and no friends. This time you had family and friends there. Kind of contrast the differences of your ability as an athlete to have the people closest to you there to cheer you on.
After I got home from Beijing, everyone was kind of like, oh, that kind of sucked, that must have sucked. And I had just had like the most fun ever. And I was like, what the heck, guys? And then after going to these games, I was like, yeah, that kind of sucked. having my family and friends get to be there was definitely the biggest difference. And I know it was really special for them, and it was equally as important for me. It was really cool just to get to hang out with them before and after the competition, as well as them getting to be there for the moment.
Let's go back to Park City. You had a World Cup here just a few months before you went over to Milano Cortina. You finished third, I believe, in that event. Again, was that a bit of a springboard for you to get that result on your home track to kind of send you off to Milano Cortina with confidence?
I don't know if you guys follow luge, but over the last 4 years, I've gotten fourth like 20 times. I'm not exaggerating. I'm not joking. So this year, I was finally able to break through and start putting myself on the medal board, and I think it was really important for my confidence and my like self-esteem going into the biggest competition, but it was also something that I always knew was coming, and I just had to be patient, and I was just kind of like hoping and working towards it being this year. So,
Just one last thing before we move on to our next question. You have the community here, you have your parents here. Anything that you want to say to this great group of supporters?
I guess just thank you. You showed up for my family in 2022 when they couldn't come, and you showed up again this year, even if it was from afar or in person. So thank you. Thank you for following and supporting, and thank you for allowing the programs that got me involved in sport to keep running.
And will we be cheering you on in 4 years in French Alps?
I hope so. That's the plan.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll be there. A little while ago, we kind of looked back, and we looked back to what thing in our communities might we not have if it hadn't been for 2002. And now I want you to look into your crystal balls, and I know that's always harder, but let's look ahead 2,833 days to what we're going to see in 2034. And is there a point of vision right now or something that's in your mind that you'd really like to see activated in our communities here in 2034? And I'm going to go to you, Merrick Dickey, first.
Yeah, well, we think there is a fantastic opportunity to think about transportation in the Wasatch back in conjunction with the Olympics. You know, the Olympics doesn't come with a big check and bringing money to town, sort of like it used to in the past, but it does help us get prioritized for projects that we want to do that are generational projects. So we're going to, we have the opportunity to work across the Wasatch back, work with Summit County, work with Wasatch County, and think about how people move. So for Park City, that means reimagining our 248 corridor. People ask us when we're going to start Olympics planning. We're way down the road. We're thinking about bus rapid transit and park and rides and all the way up into Main Street and our China Bridge garage that needs to be replaced in the next 5 years. And what are the improvements we can make on Main Street to have a gathering place in town? It does create this generational opportunity to think about transportation.
Cool. Dallin, how about you in the Heber Valley?
Yeah, similar along those lines. I think there's some transportation infrastructure that would really be key and helpful for our community. I've heard this dialogue along the Wasatch back, but wouldn't it be interesting if we could make visitation car free here along the Wasatch back? If people come to the Heber Valley, they park their car once at their hotel or wherever they are, and they're able to see a lot of the community without having to take a vehicle. So I think those are some transportation opportunities that we could look into for Heber Valley and to get people around, not only for the Olympics, but before, during, and well beyond. And additionally, I think there's activation spaces that we really need to focus on in Heber Valley. When it's all said and done and the Olympics have come through and have made a great impact on our community, I'm hoping that the cities of Midway and Heber have these great activation spaces that are leaving the community better. I liked what Natalie said this morning about the Olympics making Utah better. How can we make it better? So I think those are some aspects I think that will improve our quality of life in the Heber Valley and making things better for us as residents and also as the visitors.
Callum, let's look ahead in your crystal ball, but maybe a little bit of a focus on sport. Where do you see sport going in 2034?
Absolutely. I think this is one of the great pieces about the Olympics is focusing communities. Our community lives on the good graces of volunteer time by great people supporting sports and events and winter sports. And there's a lot of barriers in cost and effort against, say, basketball or some of these field sports. What I'm looking forward to is that it continues, that winter sport is the norm in this community. We're a ski and snowboard and ice town, that we embrace our local team, Soldier Hollow, as greatly as we embrace the football team. I have dreams. But within that we have volunteer coaches, we have officials that are able to officiate from the local kids' ski race right up to a World Cup luge event, and that is just in the normal day-to-day runnings of our community. That's what I look forward to.
Great. Kelsey, from a global perspective for Utah 2034, what's your crystal ball say for 8 years from now?
I think Utahns will be the best hosts ever, and I guess at that point I kind of want to give a challenge to all of you here. One of our well, I guess our key word that we talk about a lot is elevate. We want to elevate the games, our communities, and sport as an organizing committee. But I want to turn that back on you, and you have 2,833 days or 7 years and 9 months before the Olympics come again. And so I want to challenge you to elevate yourself. If you don't learn a language or know a language, or you used to know a language, you have 7 years to brush up or to learn a new one, right? So you get one of those pins that say, I speak whatever language, you can help our hosts. If you want to become an expert in luge and start following it now and volunteer with Callum and the Olympic Legacy Foundation, Utah Sports Commission, find ways to make yourself, your business, your community, your family the best prepared to be able to host the world in 7 years and figure out what you want to be that host, because games are whatever you make of it. And that's like, I mean, again, growing up in Wasatch County, it's like Swiss days, and I'm sure it was like Sundance up here, where there were some people that just chose to leave town, and then there were some that chose to engage, and that's when you make the most out of an event, is when you can truly be the most prepared and know how to help. So that's, I guess, my challenge is to figure out what you want to be and start on the path now to be the best host we can.
Thank you, Kelsey. By the way, in just a minute, we're going to go to questions from the audience. So be thinking of what you'd like to ask our panelists. We'll have microphones around the room for you. Before we do that, Ashley, I want to go to you, and let's take a look. 10 years ago, you were a kid coming up in Park City and finding your pathway. What advice or counsel do you have for the next generation of youth here in Park City to pursue their dreams?
I would say don't stop trying new things. Never, ever, ever feel like you've learned enough. And don't be afraid to get up and try again, even if it's scary.
It can happen, right? Okay, do we have microphones around for the room? Okay, we'll take questions for the audience, and we do appreciate if you could raise your hand so we could see you and wait until we get a microphone to you. We'll do about 10 minutes or 10, 12 minutes of questions, so anyone has any questions, be they specific or general? And give us your name, affiliation, and then ask your question.
Hey, Anthony Burke. Thank you all for being here. Congratulations on your medal. I hear a lot about let's make the community more efficient so traffic's not so bad. What talk or consideration is there to linking up a few of our ski resorts with chairlifts or gondolas? Is that still alive and well?
Anyone want to handle that?
It's outside my pay grade.
None over in the Heber Valley, right?
Yeah.
I don't know, Callum or Ryan, anything to contribute there?
No, I don't have. Unfortunately, I'm in my lane in the Olympic Legacy Foundation. I would love to see a gondola from Soldier Hollow to downtown. Actually, let me rephrase that. I'll take that.
You see, he doesn't mean that.
The Soldier Hollow Advisory Group, Dallin, there is a talk, and it's a little bit of a different answer about if there was any pathway to add a spur of the railway line up into Soldier Hollow, and this might be a dream, but to have railway access into Soldier Hollow, both for the Nordic Center and for that golf course, would be a tremendous piece of infrastructure. Now, that, Alan, I'm putting you on the spot, but that might be a challenging dream, but one of those big vision items that at least is worth asking what if, and if so, how.
Okay, another question? Anybody?
Sweet.
It's your opportunity. Okay, we have one down in front. Scott, second table in.
I have two questions, actually. The first is, someone spoke about volunteerism, and I was wondering, I've heard a lot of that mentioned, and wondering what that looks like in your mind, like what the thought around that is. And then the second question, if I may, nobody else is asking them, is around sustainability, and what are the plans around sustainability for the games?
Kelsey, you want to take the first one?
Sure.
On volunteering?
Yeah, so as we mentioned, we're about 7 years and 9 months out. Typically, games aren't awarded till 6 years out, so we're still in our bonus years. So we will have a more formal process, probably 2032-ish, around there. But as I said now, there is volunteer opportunities with the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Utah Sports Commission, and I will, again, I have no authority for this, but I would assume that if you volunteer with Callum's group and you become an expert in curling, we just had the World Curling Championships up in Ogden, and you know, and when the World Luge comes and you understand those technical things, it's more likely that you will be chosen as a volunteer. We need roughly 25 to 30,000 volunteers in 2034, and so that's what I would encourage you to do now, is to jump in and volunteer on the projects now and become proficient and experts on it, and that's the best way to help out and get us ready for 34.
I'll just add a couple of notes to that. For those who do, it's a long time before volunteer registration will be taken for 34, but there are opportunities to sign up for volunteering with Utah Sports Commission, Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, and you can find those links at the Utah 2034 site. And then can you help me again on the second question?
Sustainability.
I think sustainability.
What?
Sustainability.
Okay. Anybody? Ryan, your hands up.
I'll take it because we're excited about it. I know our team, we with Park City and Summit County, from the start of sort of ideating about the games, what do we want to do? Absolutely, we want to have the most sustainable games ever. I think that goes without saying. And we've talked a lot about building sustainability into the games themselves. You know, we have our real-time sort of, you know, board showing medal counts. We should have a real-time sustainability board showing in real-time as we're diverting, as we're, we're diverting, you know, not expending carbon and all things we're going to do for sustainability, that you can see it happening in real-time. That's on brand for the efforts that we already have underway as a community and messages and leadership that we can send to the world.
Great. Take one more question from the crowd right over here. Thank you.
I saw on the map that there's 17 events on the Wasatch Back, just here within 10, 15 miles. How do we get an Olympic Village up here? And how do we help, how can we do a host program to host their families? Because I'm keying off of the luge winner, of keeping their families near where they are. Is that something we've talked about, Kelsey?
Yeah, Callum, you want to take at least the Olympic Village part?
Yeah, so I can answer on two fronts. So there will be a elevation athlete village of sorts in the Heber Valley. So one of the unique things about the Olympic Games is for those Nordic athletes that have very, very high VO2s, very, very acute energy systems, they need to sleep at high altitude. They cannot sleep at low altitude. It affects performance. So in planning, there will be an athlete village that is located up in this area. More details are to come. I think Kelsey will be able to speak more carefully, but I do know that in the legacy documents that the URLF gets to see, one of those great assets was the way that people opened their houses to invite people to stay with them, particularly the families of athletes from overseas. It lowered their costs. It created a great local feel. I'm sure Kelsey will speak about the athlete parent village as part of the athlete village, but that's not all. I think there is an opportunity to stand on the shoulders of what was done so well in 2002 and do that again, and I'm putting Kelsey on the spot. The goal would be to do a repeat performance.
Yeah, so one of our big initiatives that we want to leave for the Olympic and Paralympic movements in general is the Athlete Family Initiative. And some athletes don't find out that they qualify for the games until about 2 weeks before the games happen. And so then their families are left in a lurch to try and find accommodations and tickets and all that stuff and compete with people who have been planning for two years, year and a half out. And so we will have a mix of athlete family village where they can come and we will help host them, or kind of a mix of helping make sure that their accommodations are easier, whether that's, again, in the broader family villages or whether that's with individuals. And some of that will shift out as we get closer. But yeah, families are going to be a key priority for us. And as Ashley mentioned, how much it meant to her to have her family there, she crossed the finish line. We want that to be a key component of our games.
Great. We're going to wrap it up with one short answer question to each of our panelists. Callum, you're going to get number one here. So as you look ahead to 2034, real quick snapshot, what's one thing that community member that you hope community members will take away from the experience in 2,833 days? Callum?
Power of community.
Great. Mayor Dickey?
I think it's that those folks who are here in 2002, no matter what they thought going into those games, it was the experience of a lifetime. You can hear it when they talk about it. It was a joyous, incredible time in Park City. And so those of us who weren't here, I'll speak for myself, I'm looking forward to building up to and having that experience.
Ashley?
I would say that it's supposed to be really cool and fun and exciting. You just have to let it be that.
Kelsey?
Kind of like what Ashley said, you get out of it what you put into it, and so I hope all of our residents put the most into it and show exactly the hospitality that we're known for, the volunteerism, again, how many languages we speak and make the world feel at home.
So everybody should go home tonight and dedicate themselves to a new language.
New language. You got 92 languages to choose from, and so pick one, and then you'll be fluent in 7 years.
Dallin, how about you?
You know, I was thinking, engage. I was 17 in 2002 when the Olympics came around, and I didn't really engage in as much as I wanted to. And one of the things I learned in Cortina is that it's one thing to understand the Olympics from a theoretical standpoint, but when you experience it, it is so much different. And I think it's going to be very tempting for us in our communities to put our houses up on up for rent for 2 weeks and get out. But I would think that's a big missed opportunity to really engage with the world and be here and experience that spirit that comes with the Olympics.
Before we close out and thank our panel, I want to just share a few other final thoughts. You know, we're all going to get inspired over the next years. We're going to get excited about the venues, the activities, the medals, and all of that. We're going to get consumed with transportation plans and ideas, and you're going to hear all sorts of different things. But at the end of the day, in March of 2034, we're going to measure ourselves by how we welcomed visitors to our home, how our communities came together, how our children were inspired, and most of all, the pride that we all feel of being residents and business leaders on the Wasatch Back. Join me in thanking our panel for their contributions today. Have a great afternoon.